Our guy is a superior piece of manpower.
The Sound of Mobile presents The Game Plan with Dave Schultz, live on 105.5 FM, online at WNSP.com, and on the WNSP app.
Lest we forget.
We have made it to the final day of SEC Media Days 2021, and the lobby of the Hyatt Regency has emptied out. There, we had about 21 stations, and we may be down to a half dozen, maybe. Dave Schultz here live at SEC Media Days. A special thanks to our sponsors. Ken Morgan, Allstate Insurance, Moe's Original Barbecue, plus Greer's Markets, Dixie Supply, LNS Air Conditioning. We are jam-packed full of guests, and we're waiting for one more potentially very special guest. We don't know if they're coming, so we're going to wait to say. We will tell you if they don't come, and we'll move on from there. But we do have definitely one particularly special guest. Auburn quarterback Bo Nix is going to join us in about 10 minutes. Had a chance to sit down with him for 5 minutes, so we will get the Auburn quarterback Bo Nix to hop on. Ross Dellinger is going to hop on after that, and then maybe, just maybe, we get that special guest. And I guess we can give a little bit of a hint. You know, Bo Nix may be very familiar with him. So we shall see if we do get that special guest. And again, we'll spill the beans if he does not come. All right. But otherwise, we are, again, chock full of guests today. Tom Hart, SEC Network. We got Cole Kubelik. We got Chuck Oliver, which you just heard on from 1 to 3 p.m. We got Brooks Capino from The Advocate, more along the lines of talking SEC than just LSU. John Neighbors from 103.7 The Buzz in Arkansas. Sam Pittman and crew were here today. We got, during the Tide and Tiger Hour, we got Jordan Hill from the Opelika Auburn News and Drew DeArmond from ESPN Huntsville. Whew. All right, so again, we may still have one. We actually may have one or two more guests that pop in here live. All those other interviews are recorded. All right, so a couple things here, and we got two stories going on at the same time. Yesterday we told you, and others have suggested, you know, not suggested, Greg Sankey basically said, you know, there's no room to make up football games if your team is not healthy and you don't have that players that test positive for COVID aren't going to be able to play. And if you don't have enough players and you can't play, you're not going to make it up. All right. Now, the NFL is going to have the same thing. If you miss ball games because people test positive for COVID, there's no room to make it up. We just saw, and this is not going to be the first one, right? We already had Cole Beasley talk about it. DeAndre Hopkins just talked about it. Never thought I would say this, but being put in a position to hurt my team because I don't want to partake in the vaccine is making me question my future in the NFL. All right. And he's not going to be the only one. But you also have same thing here in the SEC. All right. Yesterday, Nick Saban was very clear. The team in Tuscaloosa is almost at 90%. Others have said they're actually higher. I don't know why Nick would say one thing and others would say another. But, you know, almost 90% for Alabama. And he's like, first of all, it's a personal decision. You have to gauge taking the vaccine versus getting COVID. And so that's the personal decision. And then how does that affect the team? You know, where do you put your personal decision and how do you affect the team with that? And in Alabama, they're close to 90%. Let's look what happened at Auburn. Brian Harsin, A, wouldn't tell people if he was vaccinated. And B, he says they're close to 60%. He's not exactly sure they're going to get to the threshold of 80% by the season. It's a personal decision, and I'm not asking the players about it. So you have one place that is thoroughly encouraging, if not mandating, but probably mandating is a little bit too strong of a word, to get the vaccination in Alabama because they're not going to lose the ball game because someone tested positive and miss out on a chance to win a national championship. You have another program that says, see no evil, hear no evil. And that's kind of tough to swallow because I'm a big Brian Harsin fan. You're not going to tell us if you're vaccinated or not? You're not going to tell us why you're not vaccinated or not? And then you're expected to lead young people into whether you're getting the vaccination or not? And then you're going to change the culture? It's odd, Root. We have this interesting thing, right? Because that was one of the big things, and it's been a big thing for a handful of years. But we've been talking a lot about that. Guess where the culture didn't need to be changed? The one place, comparably so to the other three new coaches, right? You got to change the culture in South Carolina. You certainly got to change the culture in Tennessee. And a culture change is very tough in Vanderbilt. So that's not a culture change. That's a talent and scheme change. But that's the same thing at Auburn. No one was saying it was a bad culture in Auburn. All right, they said Gus Malzahn wouldn't adjust, didn't adjust to his talent. But that wasn't a culture thing. The one thing we said last year about Gus Malzahn and his kids was they wouldn't give up. They didn't quit. He got fired after a win. And so the one thing Brian Harsin didn't have to do is change the culture. Now he's coming in and saying, you guys do what you want. Here is sort of the education of it. But you guys do what you want. I can't wait to hear, and certainly not rooting for this, but if someone gets it in Auburn and costs Auburn a game, what happens then? And it's one thing if it's a starter. It's another thing if it's a third-string guy and he knocks out the starters. That's where I'm concerned about. It's going to be very interesting on how this all works out. It's starting with the SEC. It's now gone up to the NFL. Cole Beasley, before all this, said, I ain't getting it. Although he did say, if I'm paid, if I get some of Pfizer's profits, then maybe I'll take it. And now DeAndre Hopkins is like, I'm not taking it, and I may quit the NFL, although I doubt it, if I have to take it. All right? So it'll be very interesting to see what happens moving forward. But again, even in this state, where I believe Alabama's last in the country in vaccinations, you have Alabama, which is almost 90%. You have Auburn at 60%. Places like, I guess it was South Carolina and Florida, maybe? Was that it? Shane Beamer and Dan Mullen said they were not there quite yet, but they expected to be by the time the season got around to it. And I'll give Brian Harsin credit, Root. He basically said, I'm not sure we're going to get there. And so it's an interesting dynamic in a leadership where the championship club is doing it one way and the guy trying to change that thing is doing another thing in Auburn, and I'm not sure what direction that's going to go in. I'll tell you this right now, I don't want to hear it from Auburn if they end up forfeiting some games. That I don't want to hear. You have a choice. Here's your choice. Stand by your decision. And if it's being held against you because you didn't have enough players and you had to forfeit a big ball game, too bad. Right? When you lose the Iron Bowl because someone got sick and you had to forfeit that, which I would imagine would take all kinds of ridiculousness for that to happen. But I'm just saying, if that's the case, it's going to be a really tough way to go. All right, let's take a timeout. Whew. All right, a little bit of a rant there. I just saw the dichotomy
hang
between
on. Before
two.
Before we take your time out, I'm going to say something here.
And, you know, all right, go ahead.
You know, I don't know what Alabama is doing to convince these guys to take the vaccine, but clearly whatever it is, it's working. I don't know what kind of education they're offering, but Alabama is going to win closer to 90% of their football games, and Auburn is going to win closer to 60% of their football games. That's the way it is. And I mean,
true.
I mean,
that's
look, true. Alabama is an expert of a football school when it comes to winning football games, and they're going to continue to do so, whatever it takes. They're going to be the best at educating their guys about the vaccine. They're going to be the best at NIL. They're going to be the best at anything. So, yeah, if the vaccine and getting it or not getting it, whatever, if it impacts winning football games, I guarantee they're going to end up on the right side of it, and they're going to be in a position to where all their guys are, or 90 or over percent. You know, I don't know. I don't like getting too into it. I don't know what's going on at Auburn, but I know that's what it's going to take for success to where you don't have to forfeit a game, then I know Alabama's going to do it. I know that. You know, it's just what they do.
It seems to be that way. All right, let's take a timeout. Even the teams that were less than, you know, somewhere around the 70%, again, the Dan Mullins and the Shane Beamers, like, we're going to get there. We're going to get to the 80%. We're not there yet, but we're going to get there. Brian Harsin said, we're not there, and I don't think we're going to get there. And we're at 60% or 60-ish somewhere. All right, I hope they do. I really hope they do. All right, back after this, we will talk to the Auburn quarterback, Bo Nix, coming up. We're still open for a special guest or two. We are live from SEC Media Day, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Today's music on Sports Radio 105.5 is brought to you by 92.5 The Soul, classic rhythm and blues.
Hi, everybody. Jennifer Hale here from the NFL on Fox. And you're listening to 105.5 WNSP in Mobile.
Dave Schultz back live at SEC Media Days on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. Rootin' Wiggins back holding down the fort in Mobile. Really excited to have our next guest. He is the third-year starter for your Auburn Tigers. He is Bo Nix. Bo, thanks very much for stopping by. What was your experience like so far at SEC Media Days?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. But I had a blast today getting to represent Auburn. Obviously, it's one of those things that you always think that maybe one day you could be able to do it. And now representing my team, I'm very thankful for that opportunity. I know there's a lot of guys that could be here, but I am thankful that I'm here.
Did you volunteer or did Coach ask?
Coach Harson picked me, and I think that means even more because I'm just thankful that I was picked. Me and OP, obviously we're doing something right for our team, and that's just very encouraging.
Did you already get a workout in today?
Yes, sir, we did. We actually ran this morning up in the stadium, and so we came after that.
We're talking to Bo Nix on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. All right, assess your college career so far.
So the first year was a lot about kind of experience. Gained a lot of experience, played in a bunch of different stadiums, bunch of different fan bases, bunch of different atmospheres. Won some big games, lost some tough games. Last year, I think, was a season of growth. I understood what the little things, the difference between having great success and then just being good. But this year, I'm just really looking forward to continue to grow, be a better leader, be a better quarterback, for whatever, all the things that means, all the above, from a leadership standpoint, from a player on the field, running, throwing, calling things, being a complete quarterback.
The two plays that stick out in my mind, well, I guess there's the Iron Bowl, but the Seth Williams play, two Seth Williams plays, I guess, the one against Oregon, and then the throw you made to Seth Williams against LSU, you're falling 5 yards out of bounds. I thought the throw was going to be 5 to 10 yards out of bounds. How did you keep that in bounds? I know Seth made a good catch, but that throw should not have been anywhere near in play.
Well, it was late in the game, I believe, and we kind of needed something, and so rolling out, I'd done that before, and he's just a good 50-50 ball catcher, so I knew giving him something where he could catch it, nobody caught it. He just went up and made a great play, and most people think that was done on accident, but it was done on purpose. And I do need to give a shout-out to Will Hastings, because against Alabama in 2019, I was going to my left, and I threw it, and I was not throwing it away either, and he came out of nowhere and caught it. But my freshman year, obviously Seth against Oregon, that's kind of the monumental one. That's the one everybody remembers. It's the one that kind of set the scene for who I am as a player and for what Auburn can be.
We're talking to Auburn quarterback Bo Nix. What's been the difference between the offense that you had your first 2 years and the offense that's going to come this year?
Last year and the year before, we were more spread, run the ball, 11 personnel, and this year we're kind of multiple. We have we can play two tight ends, we can get it empty, we can do a lot of different things, we can be versatile, I think, which will help us because it'll keep defenses on their heels, and defense won't really we can do different things based off what the defense is doing that'll give us an advantage, but I'm excited to learn something different. I'm excited to be under center and do what all that means and to continue to grow from that standpoint.
I heard two tight ends. Does that mean you're throwing to tight ends?
Yeah, especially here in spring and summer, we've used the tight ends in the passing game. We've thrown to them, and they're more than just H-backs. They're now truly playing tight end.
We're talking to quarterback Bo Nix from the Auburn Tigers. All right, so what are you looking to improve on? You spent some time down at quarterback country with David Morris down in Mobile. What did he teach you? What did he like, and what did he say we need to work on?
Yeah, getting back to the fundamentals, my footwork. In college, it's tough because you can't work with your quarterback coach all year round. So my first 2 years in the offseason, I kind of developed some bad habits in the offseason to where maybe kind of lazy with my feet, and my form got all out of whack. So just going back to the technique, footwork, having a good foot, good feet, good base, good balance, and then just continue to work on my form and so I can be sharp. And just this offseason, I've really worked on the technique of it and the fundamentals.
And so how long does it take a quarterback like yourself, an athlete like yourself, to make those changes, to adapt to those changes?
I'd like to think not too long, because it's muscle memory. It's just getting back to what I'm used to doing. And it takes every day to work on it. You just got to do the same thing over and over and over and make it a habit. And I had kind of gotten out of that habit. So now just getting back into it and doing what I've done in the past, I think it will make me a better player.
Bo Nix, Auburn quarterback, opening up against Akron in about 7 weeks. Best of luck, and thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much, War Eagle.
All right, short and sweet with quarterback Bo Nix. Again, we take out what we want to hear about it. I heard two tight ends, Root. A lot of times that means running, but I want to, is Auburn actually going to throw to the tight end? Is that going to break like a 150-year streak or something like that? What's that about?
I mean, a lot of Auburn fans definitely hope so. We know there's talent at that position and would like to see it.
I just think it just opened. I mean, again, it doesn't have to be, you know, a Ron Gronkowski type of deal, but geez, just to have that threat of having the tight end, it doesn't open up the rest of the field. It helps out with the running game. It helps out with the wideouts. It just helps. All right, we're gonna keep it right here to see what happens as this potential special guest is about to walk past me. We'll see where he goes. They're allegedly gonna go all the way down to the end and come back, but we shall see. Although he is talking to another member of the media, so I don't want to go to commercial in case he just happens to sit down and we're in commercial break. Although, you know, producer extraordinaires Wiggins and Root can get out of a commercial break really quickly, but I'd rather just not. Otherwise, we'll probably come back and go to Ross Dellinger, a little bit of a shorter interview, and we can be ready to go when our special guest hopefully sits down. No guarantee that that's the case. All right, we can take your phone calls if you want, 694-1055, 694-1055. A couple of comments in the app. You know, there, Dave, why do you care if Auburn head coach is vaxxed? I guess I do care, but that's not really what I said. I care that he didn't tell us if he was and why. That would be the thing. This is a good question. What happens when the vax players contract the Delta variant and have to forfeit anyway? I don't know that answer. That's a good question. I mean, all this is not 100%. I get it. All right. I don't have the answers to all the questions, but here's the other thing. I would presume if you get the Delta variant and you're sick for a couple of days, as has been the case, although I really haven't seen any update from Rich Eisen. Have you seen an update from Rich Eisen? He was bad for a couple of days. So I don't know what happens at that case. Anyone that criticizes someone for not getting a flu or COVID shot need to understand it's more than winning a stupid football game. Hats off to any coach who says it's none of your business. I'm sure liberals will get their blank to blank in, well, because they feel entitled. That's right. Okay. All right. There you go. We knew that was coming.
Always got to get political. Business. Always got to get political. You
know, right. It's none of your business if you did or didn't. I guess liberally I did that again. You know, we all got these vaccines when we were kids. Right. This is nothing new. All right. I know it's not, quote, FDA approved, but that's this week's excuse, because it will be FDA approved eventually. And then what's going to be the excuse? All right. Dave, maybe you'd like to answer our questions about your personal medical history. In terms of vaccinated, I got vaccinated. I tried to get vaccinated early as possible, but I got vaccinated. All right. I got a little low-grade fever after the second shot, but I'm vaccinated. Happy to say that. All right. So, because I care about, you know, my friends and family and coworkers. All right. Okay. All right. So the special guest went down to the other end. We'll see if he's making his way back up here. All right. Everyone says it's a personal choice unless they don't agree with your choice. It is a personal choice. You're right. DeAndre Hopkins has a personal choice. You can either get vaccinated or maybe he retires. It's up to him. All right. What happens if he gets his teammate sick? What happens then? Nick Saban said, look, we can control what happens in the building, but we can't control the kids out of the building and what happens, what they bring into the building. We can control what happens in the building, but we can't control what comes into the building. All right? 90% vaccinated with Saban, 60% vaccinated at Auburn.
Which that,
I'm just giving you the numbers
to me,
they gave us.
That's the very interesting part to me, because there isn't like a big regional divide between the two schools, obviously. So there must be an educational divide or something else, which, you know, is convincing these kids, these college-age players to get it. I mean, there's got to be something going on, some level of education that is, you know, being put on them. I don't know what
right.
it could be.
Right. I'm with you. I don't understand it. There is, we're not talking about, you know, like 82% and 78%. That'd be one thing. But it's 90%, close to 90%, so maybe just under that, and closer to 60% for Auburn. So I don't get it. All right. I just don't want to hear about it later on when Auburn has to forfeit. I don't want to hear about it. All right. I hope that nobody gets sick, but they're certainly rolling the dice. Okay. All right. Let's take a timeout. Someone in here says, just because you got vaccinated doesn't mean you're not going to get the virus. So far, we see that to be true.
I mean,
I have two friends right now I have two friends right now that have contracted COVID, and they were both vaccinated. So if the players are going to catch it, then they're going to have to forfeit games, and there's no ands, buts about it. So far, though, not all the cases, but the people who have gotten vaccinated and have gotten COVID have not gotten as sick as others. That's not always the case. It's not 100%. I get it. But it has been lesser symptoms. All right, let's take a timeout. All right, Ross Dellinger coming up next on a Tide and Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Today's music on Sports Radio 105.5 is brought to you by 92.5 The Soul, classic rhythm and blues.
Dave Schultz back at SEC Media Days with our buddy from Sports Illustrated. He is Ross Dellinger. It's been a slow Media Days there, Ross. What's new?
Yeah, I know. It was a... fairly uneventful until yesterday around, I guess, 2:30 p.m., and then all hell broke loose. So it's always something, man. It's not like we have enough stuff and enough topics to cover in college sports these days, right? It's just one thing after another. Playoff expansion now, conference realignment, and the NIL stuff, and Supreme Court. It's crazy.
All right, so let's get to the Texas OU stuff. What do you hear? Has there been anything new in the last 24 hours?
No, not really. You know, the Big 12 athletic directors and presidents will meet this afternoon, I think, around 5 o'clock to discuss the issue. I don't think they have discussed it as a group, so it'll be a pretty important meeting. What was said to them? Maybe some news might come out. You know, my biggest question, obviously, is: are the Texas and Oklahoma ADs and presidents on that call, or is it just the others? So, it'd be interesting to find out.
Talking to Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated. I mean, there's a chance that in a few years there's no more Big 12.
There's a chance. There's a chance it goes the way of like the Big East and all the other leagues that we have seen basically dissolve. I would think that the Big 12 would try to, you know, replace those two teams, but there's a chance everything kind of falls apart if there's panic that sets in with other teams in the league that try to leave, which is always a possibility.
All right, a couple of stories that you had before SEC Media Day, something that I predicted. If anybody was going to screw up the 12-team playoff, it was going to be the Pac-12 or more along the lines of the Rose Bowl. And, oh, my goodness, that's what's happening. What did you report about that?
Yeah.
Or could happen, I should say.
Yeah, the Rose Bowl, I think most believe that the Rose Bowl would not move its date and time, which has been for a long time on January 1 at 2 p.m. local time in California. And I just, a lot of people don't expect them to move that. And in order for them to be a full rotational partner in the 12-team playoff model, you know, where you host semis and quarters on a rotating basis, they would need to move the date and time. And so the fact that they won't is certainly a potential impediment. And if the Big Ten and Pac-12 want to stand behind them, they can, and potentially blow up any immediate expansion. And, you know, so that's still kind of not known exactly where the Pac-12 and Big Ten stand on this. And there is a compromise. You know, the Rose Bowl conceivably could be a permanent quarterfinal host and host every year and keep their date in town. So that's still a possibility.
Is there a chance that the powers to be tells the Rose Bowl to stick it and they do their game and they're not included in anything anymore?
Well, I think there is a chance. I think there is some frustration among CFP leadership in the Rose Bowl and accommodating the Rose Bowl. That has been an issue for a while with them, and I think it probably will continue to be an issue. I'm not sure they'll be as accommodating as they've been in the past. I get that feeling anyway.
All right, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. The other story you were talking about is the Power Five, some of the Power Five, specifically in the SEC, and doing some great reporting with Greg Sankey saying NCAA, you know, let's go. Let's show some leadership. What did you learn talking to Greg Sankey over the last couple of weeks?
Learned that he's frustrated, probably as frustrated as I've ever heard Greg Sankey, just about the NCAA in general and how there needs to be a new governing model and a new structure. And my story that published Monday was kind of in an effort to drop it before he talked, kind of knowing what he was going to talk about. And he did. He talked about his frustrations and was public with that. He's been the most publicly frustrated, probably commissioner, an outspoken commissioner about this whole issue. And you know, Mark Emmert got ahead of the story kind of last week when he announced basically the same thing, that he's open to some kind of restructuring. And we're going to see that coming.
How long would something along those lines take?
Yeah, that's a big question that I don't know the answer to. Usually that process, you might be able to make incremental changes early on, but sweeping changes you would think would take some time.
All right, let's wrap it up here with Ross Dellinger. What were you planning on working on next week, and now what are you going to be working on next week? And are those two things different?
Yeah, I'm heading to Pac-12 Media Day, and so that should be interesting, obviously, with all the conference realignment. There'll be a lot of realignment stuff, for sure. That is now on the plate. I'm going to take a little time off by going to the beach here in a minute. But I'm scared that while I'm laying on the beach, there'll be more stuff happening. It's just nonstop. So,
does the better half take your phone away from you?
Ha! No, she does not. No, because I don't take her phone away from her. So,
how much has she taught you? We're talking about Elizabeth Crisp. She covers Congress. How much has she taught you about government in Congress?
Well, a lot. You know, she's got great connections there, and it's always good to say, my wife covers the White House. So it's always fun.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Always appreciate your time. Go catch a plane. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right, Ross Dellinger joining us from SI.com. There was a lot to unpack in that. Obviously, the Texas OU situation with the Big 12. Apparently, they're meeting today, Rude. Is that right? They're meeting today at 5 p.m. We'll find out what's going to come out of that. Others are saying that at the end of the season or the beginning of next year, Texas is going to send a letter to the Big 12 saying, hasta la bye-bye, baby, and they're going to want out. Again, I presume none of this is really going to happen until 2025 in terms of when Texas and Oklahoma would be able to join the SEC. I think the Big 12 is going to go also bye-bye. I had, you know, friends from Lafayette saying, is UL going to join the Big 12? UL can't draw 30,000 people. How do you think they're going to be in the Big 12? I guess if Oklahoma State comes to town, okay. But do you think anyone's going to come to watch Kansas play the Cajuns? I don't know if anyone goes to watch Kansas in Kansas these days. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. It does sound like it is progressing a lot faster than we thought originally. That's A. Then we went back to say, we talked about his story about the Rose Bowl, and we predicted that one. We saw that one coming a mile away, that the Rose Bowl was just going to, you know, stick their middle finger up to the college football playoff, and wham, we're not playing at 2 p.m. on January 1st, blah, 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 blah. Take your playoff, and we don't care, which is what I would tell them to do. You go play with your teams over there. All right, sue us in court if you want. But if you don't get in line with the rest of the college football program, you go play with your second-tier Big Ten team. You go play with your second-tier Pac-12 team, and no one's going to care. And your Rose Bowl can be completely irrelevant. You can become, you know, you can become one of those lesser bowls that no one cares about if you want to play that way. Because I think that's what's going to happen. Or, as Ross said, maybe they are permanent stop quarterfinal game. Although I want quarterfinal games to be on campus. And then the other thing is what we talked with Greg Sankey yesterday. Greg Sankey coming down and just looking for some leadership. And, again, talk about your proverbial can of worms route. Although Mark Emmert came back and said, look, the NCAA can't be policing these things anymore. It's going to be left up to the state and the schools. Well, okay. All right. The schools are not going to self-police them. Okay. The school. Anytime you get a NCAA violation, they all want a slap on the wrist before the NCAA comes down on them. Here's the other part of that, and that somewhere along the way, you do have to, the NCAA has to hustle up. All right. But the Will Wade stuff's been going on for 4 or 5 years now. This is ridiculous. It's a, I'd say it's a cloud over his head, but he continues to coach well. He continues to recruit well. The football program is being investigated for a player's father who got a job while his son was at LSU. It wasn't that the kid was paid. It was that the dad was paid. And it's such a minor infraction. Go give LSU a slap on the wrist. What is taking so long with that? And then you have this Tennessee thing that, you know, was there bags of money coming through? Was it a Wendy's route? What was it? Was it a Burger King? Was it a Chick-fil-A? Was it a fast food joint? Like they're getting it through the drive-thru?
I mean, what, the McDonald's bags of cash?
Well, was that it?
Yep.
So, I mean, you got all of that going on, and that's why, you know, usually coaches get 5-year deals, but that's why Heupel got a 6-year deal, because this may take a little bit, and he knows that the hole that Tennessee has dug for him is not, it hasn't stopped. He hasn't started to fill up the hole and build a foundation yet. It's going to get deeper, but the NCAA is going to take their time. Obviously, this is probably, I don't know, it's not even a year yet for the Tennessee stuff, but, you know, the LSU stuff's been going on forever. And, again, whatever it is, whatever the punishment is, do it already so everybody can move on. Talk to somebody connected with the – well, not connected with the LSU program, but covers the LSU program, thinks Will Wade's going to keep his job, that they couldn't find anything with Javonte Smart whatsoever, and – just move on already. And Greg Sankey's looking for that leadership, you know. And he basically said, look, we had a 2-year leeway in the NIL when California suggested they were going to do it, you know, in 2023 or whenever it was. But they did that 2 years ago. And so now we go to, you know, the Supreme Court and lose, and we spend $68 million on all this. You have to be kidding me. And so he's just looking for a little leadership and obviously also some equity when it comes to men's and women's sports, right? The locker rooms at the softball championships were just brutal, and that stadium was packed, and they had a lot more better ratings, as it turns out, than the College Baseball World Series did. And so he's just looking for some leadership, that there seems to be a lack thereof. He did blame some of the committees that he may be a part of and part of the leadership that he's a part of. But there is a long way to go. Oh, here we go. We got some great things in the app. Here we go. I agree, and I think Dave should have stayed up north. His political views are now upon his. I've had my shot, but I have no right at yelling half the country right now that didn't. Am I yelling at half the country that didn't? I think we're commenting on Alabama has it. Auburn doesn't quite. Brian Harsin doesn't seem to care if Auburn does. And when something happens to his school, who's going to complain then? All right, that's all. I just don't want to hear the complaining. Someone's going to complain about it, and it's not going to be it's going to be Auburn fans. That's what's going to happen there. Okay. All right. If there's enough facts, rate 90%, there won't be testing. Such a scam, 6 foot, 90%, both random and arbitrary. No science, that's not true. But if it means no test, therefore no possibility of forfeit, get vax. Well, that seems basic. That seems basic. All right, believe me, if that happens, not one Auburn player or fan I'm probably supposed to be give a hoot about what you think. That's probably true, but I bet there'll be more than one Auburn fan that gives a hoot that it happens. They may not care what I think, but they're going to absolutely care what happens to their program if they don't win football games, because that's all they want to do, win football games.
Let me I mean, throw out another possible scenario that could happen within the program. And look, I mean, personally, I don't give a damn. Do what you want to do. All right. You know, I'll look after myself and that's it. Everyone else can figure it out on their own. If it takes them that long to figure things out, okay, whatever. I don't care. It doesn't. Everyone can do what they want to do. But I wonder, you say 60% of these players have been vaccinated. I wonder down the line, maybe during the season, if there could be some internal turmoil within the players themselves. If they're put in a bad spot, or is the team going to fracture because the guys that maybe did get it are upset at the ones that didn't, and now they're in a bad spot, and now your team is fractured with it from the inside out.
Right. Yeah. That, I mean, that hasn't come out yet either, right? Everyone's saying that may happen with the NIL because the quarterback's getting all the money and the right guard's not getting that kind of cash. Absolutely. Again, it's one thing if the starting left tackle gets sick. It's another thing if the third string right guard gets sick and he gets everybody else sick. That's going to be the problem when something like that happens. And we have an example of what happens. Even Nick Saban brought it up. We don't want to see the NC State thing. We don't want to be in a position where we played in the semifinal and then we can't play in the championship game because we're all sick. That's what he's trying to avoid. Okay. Wait a minute. Did Harsin really say that he didn't care if his players got vaccinated or not? He said he didn't ask. That's what he said.
Yes.
He's not asking.
He said it's a personal choice and that's that.
Yep. Yep. So if I said he didn't care, but I didn't mean that. He said he's not asking them. It's a personal choice. So I don't know if he cares or not, but he's not. I can't even say if he's instructing them one way or another, but he's not asking them if they're vaccinated. I'll make that clear. All right. Let's take a timeout. We'll see what we're going to do next. Play this one by ear, Root. All right. Dave Schultz, Stephen Root, live from SEC Media Days, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Today's music on Sports Radio 105.5 is brought to you by 92.5 The Soul, classic rhythm and blues.
I'm Laura Rutledge with ESPN. You're listening to WNSP 105.5.
All right, our special guest making his way. He's the last man standing. He's the last person here representing his school. He is the head coach of Auburn University, the Auburn Tigers. He is Brian Harsin. Coach, thanks very much for sitting down. It's been a long day.
It has been, but it's been a good day. I enjoy talking about our program and certainly sharing our vision, what our guys have accomplished since we got there, and then, you know, what our focus is going into fall camp.
It is interesting because a lot of you people, coaches, talk about culture. That was kind of the one thing that Auburn didn't have to change because it was a winning program.
Right.
So what was the first thing, big picture, that you wanted to do when you came into the program?
Well, I wanted to, first of all, hire staff.
Sure.
Right, get the right people in there that are going to believe in the vision that I have for the program and are going to be able to come in there and actually execute it and that want to be at Auburn. You know, I want to be around good people. That was number one. I want good people and I want coaches that are going to be able to do their jobs at a high level. And then with our players, it was, you know, I want them to get to know me. So I wanted them to know me. I wanted them to know my family and then talk about what our expectations are going to be for our players. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was simple. Hey, the expectations are your personal best. You know, what is that? Every day you show up, if that's the goal, then you're showing us every single day. And so I wanted to set some expectations for our players. I also wanted them to know that, hey, there's been a big change, that we're going to be okay. We'll be more than okay. But I'm going to need you guys to really buy into what we're doing. And you're not going to understand every single thing I ask you to do, but I need you to do it right now. And you'll see the reasons why. And so you had to ask for trust really early on.
Sure.
Right? And it's hard because you're, I mean, everybody talks about building trust. Well, we're going to get to that. But I had to ask for trust early and just say, guys, because we have to go, because every workout, everything we do, it's all going to matter. So I need you guys to believe in this right here, and we need to get started. And over time, you're going to see that this is the right thing for us to be doing.
It appears you lead by example. What time do you work out in the morning?
Well, it depends. Yeah, it depends. You know, I'm not up at 4:30 in the morning, but I do enjoy that. I enjoy the work and the work the guys do and being a part of it.
We're talking to head coach Brian Harsin of the Auburn Tigers. Obviously, the key is your quarterback, as in most places. It is the quarterback. He came down to Mobile. He's working with David Morris of QB Country. Mm-hmm. Have you seen him throw since then? And what did you want him to – we'll put it this way. What did you want Bo to work on this offseason and since you saw him last officially in at the spring game?
Yeah, I've seen Bo throw. I really like his mechanics. Always for quarterbacks, footwork. You know, it's just
he said the same thing.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, that's the number one thing. I mean, it's your platform. Everything is about footwork at the quarterback position. Like if you're playing it, you can throw it, but you can't play great at the quarterback position if you don't have great footwork. And so I wanted to see that, and then really just his preparation of understanding our offense, understanding what it is we're trying to accomplish, and spending the time to be a student of the game. Great quarterbacks, great players, that's what they do. Are you willing to spend this amount of time and sacrifice a lot of personal things in order to be this type of player and have this knowledge so that you're ready when we go out there and practice in August? Because it's not just about the games for the quarterback. It's every day. There are no days off. If you have a bad day in practice...
Did you find that moron yet?
The Game Plan with Dave Schultz continues on the Sound of Mobile, 105.5 FM, WNSP. Online at WNSP.com and on the WNSP app.
Dave Schultz back live at SEC Media Day, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. He always joins us, talk LSU. We'll talk a little SEC as well. From the advocate for the time being, it is Brooks Koepka. Secretly talented, pulls out the crazy little thing called love last night at karaoke night here in Hoover. And, oh, my goodness, did anybody know you could sing? Because you got a good voice, man.
Well, I didn't realize that was going to hit Twitter either. So you can't go anywhere without especially hanging out with a bunch of media guys. So how was
you really should have known that.
I should have known better. Yeah. So that was fun though. Yeah.
All right. What is the reaction in Baton Rouge about the bomb that dropped yesterday with OU and Texas trying to join the SEC? And if that's the case, maybe Alabama and Auburn move to the East. I would think that LSU fans and LSU is like, bring it on.
Well, you know. I mean, LSU and Texas obviously had that home-and-home schedule, the LSU winning that big one on their way to the national championship season in 2019. I think everybody was looking forward to that Texas game last year that was unfortunately canceled amid all this pandemic. And, really when you're looking at this, and obviously this is still ongoing. I mean, the reports that are like Big 12 is going to meet today and talk this through and, maybe who knows how quickly this could happen if it does happen, it's like, all right, how much tougher does the West become? You know, like, does Oklahoma and Texas, are they both in the West? And you know, you've already got Alabama, Auburn, all of this. Like, so what is that going to look like? These are just my thoughts here, at the end of all of this, like, it's all always going to be about money here. And that's what Texas and Oklahoma appear to be seeking. The Big 12 hasn't been able to land that big landmark deal that the Big 10, that the SEC has done. And, being able to move to another spot and bolster that, that's what they're interested in. And then down the line, if, deals keep going, I think the other part of this is you're looking at the playoff expansion and how does that affect how conferences are going, and that's foresight a part of this as well. So it's already tough in the SEC, so adding these two, and you think about the other sports as well, thinking about how Oklahoma has been making good runs in basketball and Texas was in the College World Series as well. This strengthens the conference and those kind of ideas there. Obviously Texas A&M made it clear yesterday that they don't want this to happen. Ross Bjork was talking about that several times yesterday, and that they left the Big 12 for a reason and to go to a place where they could be their own university, and they've done well since. A Heisman Trophy, almost made it a college football playoff last year. Obviously, a lot of things that are still up for discussion. But as far as Louisiana goes, I mean, they already had that history the past couple of years, and just how good a game that was. I think there'd be interest just from an objective point of view to see, see good games in home stadiums again. So I mean that would be interesting to see.
In terms of the money, should Texas and OU join the SEC, 7 out of the top 10 revenue-generating schools as of 18 and 19 would be in the SEC. Only Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State would not be. That is a juggernaut waiting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a better option than what they have currently in the Big 12. I mean, not knowing what they might renew later down the line, just look at the markets of there. It's like it's a trivia question for me that I always talk about with the Big 12. The third largest stadium is Iowa State. The markets within them, Kansas State, Manhattan, you know, Lawrence, all these places, Lubbock, you know, the competition level there. Oklahoma has won 6 straight Big 12 championships, and they're 0-4 in the playoff. Their marketability and competitiveness is, probably 4th if you're talking about Power 5 conferences right now, behind the ACC, SEC, and the Big 10. So, the one thing you might, I've seen this talked about the last couple of days, today and yesterday, is, you know, Texas possibility of independence. I mean, they had their Longhorn network, and that was partly what split up the conference in the first place 10 years ago. But has that been successful? Texas's competitiveness has dropped severely since that network came out, and can they be a Notre Dame on their own and strike a deal that works for them? But Oklahoma too is going to try and pair themselves in a spot where they can get some money out of this. So yeah, I mean, if you're looking at just numbers as they stand right now, yeah, it would make sense for them to move to a place where they can boost that. No one's going to say no to more money if they can find a way to do it.
Talking to Brooks Capena of The Advocate. All right, what else stood out to you besides that huge news yesterday here at SEC Media Day?
Well, this whole week was interesting to hear from Monday, Commissioner Greg Sankey talking about the potentiality of teams forfeiting games if they are disrupted within their teams with the coronavirus. So it's clearly an incentive for these players and teams to get vaccinated, because there's no mandate for teams and players to get vaccinated. And lots of coaches have talked about their rate so far. I've been told by multiple people that LSU is high above the 80% that Sankey said Monday. It's actually above 90%, which means not only does LSU not have to wear masks and regularly test throughout the season, which was a costly and time-consuming thing last year, but also they have a lower chance of having outbreaks throughout the year, which has a health part of it, which doctors across the state and the country have been saying that this helps and limits the spread, but also the competitive part of this, where they wouldn't have to forfeit games. I think that speaks pretty closely to a lot of what these coaches and players want. They want to compete. They want to play. They want to win. And I think you're starting to see the disparity a little bit. It's interesting to see teams like Alabama have close to 90%, LSU above 90%, Georgia is at 85%. But these are all in states that are in the low 10 across the country in vaccination rates by quite a margin. A lot of these are in the 30% range. I mean, Louisiana just got done. They're still in the middle of a lottery for people to get vaccinated. So that's been one of the major points of this week is how our team's addressing this, and what is this season going to look like if outbreaks happen. And teams seem to have a choice lowering the possibilities of that happening.
Well, it's interesting the way that Nick Saban put it, and as you said, he said they were close to 90%. I've heard other people say a little bit more. So he says, look, it's an individual choice, and then you have to gauge that against team, which is basically Nick Saban's way of saying, get it, and you'll play, and if you don't get it, you may not play. And then you have Brian Harsin to say the Auburn Tigers are in the 60% range, and he doesn't know if they'll hit the threshold by the the start of the season. It's a deeply personal for a lot of people. It seems to be two different attitudes, even right here in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the season plays out. It's things that we've looked at the past year. I mean, last year there were several postponements. There were two with LSU, one with an outbreak within the team, and one with Florida and on their side. And there was flexibility at the end of the year to be able to do that. And Sankey says that's not there. So if teams end up forfeiting games, how does that look in a full schedule season? When it's already hard to get into the playoffs, so you got four spots right now. So how hard is it whenever you when one team doesn't have a game on their schedule, and maybe even a loss on that? So definitely a lot of competitive parts of this, but a lot of the health part of this as well.
Let's wrap it up with Brooks Capena from the Advocate as we're wrapping up SEC Media Days. Was there somebody who stood out that impressed you that you hadn't heard from before?
Well, on the LSU end, talking to Austin Deculus, it was really interesting to talk to him because...
You were just caring about the flow of his hair.
Well, you know, he's thinking he can get a lot of NIL deals out of this, so it might work out for him. A major part of LSU's team this year is this offensive line. They were expecting to have all of their starters coming back, and then obviously Dare Rosenthal transferring to Kentucky. How does that all come together? And Austin Deculus is a major part of that. He's been their standard right tackle for three years now. And, talking to him about Cam Wire and that left tackle, they have a lot of faith in him to step in and do that role. So just hearing from him and about the direction of the team on offensively, that's a big part of what they're trying to do. And not only that, but the run game last year is something that we keep pointing out, too, is like that was not – conducive to the offense most of the time. Not a 1,000-yard rusher for the first time in several seasons for LSU. And this was something that Ogeron wanted to have a balanced attack. And they've got the running backs to do it this year. Does the offensive line provide that push? We'll see. So, talking to him was really interesting.
Bruce Cabina from The Advocate, always generous with his time. Great to see you, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Anytime.
There you go, our buddy Brooks Cabina from The Advocate. Steven Root here. I will be your DJ for the rest of the afternoon. Spinning the tracks, we'll keep it moving here. Got a lot of guests. Dave's been putting in all the work in Hoover. We're going to keep it moving and get to our next one. Coming up here, we'll hear from Tom Hart right here, Sports Radio WNSP.
Today's music on Sports Radio 105.5 is brought to you by 92.5 The Soul, classic rhythm and blues.
My name is David Palmer, and I'm on WNFC 105.5.
Dave Schultz back live at Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. Steven Root still manning the ship at our palatial studios at WNSP. Thrilled to have on the play-by-play voice of SEC primetime on Saturday nights. It is the one and the only. And it looks like he's wearing tapered jeans, if you ask me. Skinny jeans. He is Tom Hart. Are you denying that these are skinny or taper jeans?
In the era of name, image, and likeness, a shout-out to my sponsor, Blue Delta Jeans, out of Tupelo, Mississippi. They do an amazing job with custom denim. They're a huge sports fan. They do a great... So, yeah, Peter Burns...
They look good.
Well, I appreciate that. Peter Burns and I happen to be wearing the exact same color in the same thread on the same day. They look better on me, but...
Right.
You know, they're just...
Is this like sheets, like thread count? Is this the way the jeans work? What do we talk about, thread?
This is pure denim, okay. Number one. You don't wash these jeans, okay?
Don't wash them.
You go at least a year without washing them. I explained this to Greg Sankey a couple years ago. He said, well, Tom, what if you had Mexican for dinner? Like, what do you mean you don't wash them? So you don't. You need to clean them. You can put them in the freezer for overnight. That would kill some bacteria. But otherwise, they're so breathable, pure denim, it'll just air itself out. But you can, yeah, the thread. So I've got gray jeans, and I've got white thread. So you can pick your own thread. Is this the most you've ever talked about pant wear, trouser wear at SEC Media Days?
So far. So far. Well, I'll get into fashion with Kubelik later on in the week.
Well, you can talk shoes with Cole. That's where his fashion sense ends.
We're talking to Tom Hart, SEC Media Days host of primetime football games on SEC Network. All right, so what are you looking forward to this season outside of, actually going to the games?
Well, that's a big one. I'm thrilled to be in stadiums. It's going to be wonderful. I can't wait for opening night as it is. Sounds like we'll be at Neyland Stadium for Bowling Green, Tennessee, and just to see stadiums full again. I got a taste of it at the SEC baseball tournament. Got another great experience at Omaha for the College World Series. And this return to normalcy, and it's a battle. It really is to get everybody to the point where we can do this and do it safely. So I'm excited by it. I got to admit, though, hearing Greg Sankey speak day one of SEC Media Days, I'm also a little bit concerned. And that concern comes from the fact that Greg Sankey's words are valuable. He does not waste them. So when he describes the vaccination issue within college football and how essentially dire it is, that is a big red flag to me, that this is an issue within the SEC, and therefore it's an issue throughout college football, because we know that with the leadership here that this league is ahead of most. And so my advice to coaches going into the week was, you really only have two answers when you get to the podium and they ask how many of your players are vaccinated. And without prioritizing one answer or the other, it's either yes or no, meaning it's either we haven't yet met the threshold, but it's important for us to do so, and I'm hopeful we get there. Or it's we've met the threshold, I am proud of our players and our health and training staff that we've gotten there, and I'm thrilled that it's not a concern for me going forward. The number that I heard, and whether Saban admits this or not, is that Alabama's at 98% vaccination.
Shocker.
Right. Because the team comes first at Alabama. And if you want to be part of the team, you follow the team rules. All right. There's plenty of offensive linemen who don't want to wear knee braces, but the O-line coach says, you wear a knee brace on both knees or you don't play. It's part of being a team. Hopefully, the general public sees this and gets this message too, especially here in the South where I live, and people start to understand the importance of it, of this specific topic. But if it's important enough for Greg Sankey to speak about and to use his valuable time and the column inches that he gets and the internet coverage that he gets and the broadcast coverage by talking about this, that to me says that this is a concern of his within this league and within college football as a whole. And so, not to be a downer, but I would say we're not out of the woods yet. And so I'm hopeful that when Bowling Green goes into Neyland Stadium, we got that game on SEC Network, that there's 105,000 people in there and they're sitting cheek to cheek and everybody's thrilled and everything's hunky-dory. But we've got a long way to go to get there.
Talking to Tom Hart, play-by-play voice, along with Jordan Rogers and Cole Kubelik on SEC Network Primetime. All right, so let's talk about the four coaches. They each seem to be in different situations. You got Shane Beamer in South Carolina, Charlie Lee at Vanderbilt. You have Brian Harsin with Auburn, and we'll get to him in a second, and Josh Heupel at Tennessee. Which do you think is the most pressure, and which do you think has the most patience?
Wow, those two words go hand in hand. I don't think there's pressure on any of those guys this year. Now, expectations at Auburn will be greater to get there sooner. They won't have the patience that obviously Vanderbilt would. South Carolina will. They're all entering very different situations. South Carolina has talent returning where I believe it matters most in this league, up front. D-line, O-line, they've got willing and capable players up there. So that's great for Shane Beamer. Tennessee does not. I mean, that was an exit ramp off of the Tennessee Highway, and everybody left town. I thought when Henry To'oto entered the transfer portal and then eventually left, that was that wasn't pulling one Jenga piece out of the tower. That was like just taking the whole bottom floor and everything crumbled. You can't win in this league without talent. Tennessee had a massive talent exodus. Does that mean that Josh Heupel isn't the right guy for the job. I'm not saying that. Just this year could be a disaster in Knoxville, and they've had a lot of those lately. I would be shocked if they are even in bowl consideration by the end of the year. Auburn should be in better shape. Vanderbilt also had a massive talent exodus during the season last year. I think they're always going to be, with this new transfer portal flexibility, they're always going to be in danger of losing frontline great elite players. But there's no pressure there. And they only now started investing in that program to the extent that is necessary, but still not to the level of other teams in the league.
Talking to Tom Hart, play-by-play announcer, SEC Network primetime, Saturday nights. I should mention that you're a man of the people. You know, the Cole Kubelik and the Peter Burnses and the Ryan McGees, they got ESPN PR people holding their hands, taking them all over the place. I handle it myself. I'm Tom Hart. I go where I want to be. I go where I want to go and where I'm needed the most.
Listen, I don't need an escort, okay? Although I do like them going to and from games. it's funny you bring that up. I was talking to Sankey yesterday, and I drove over from Atlanta. I wanted to be in the ballroom for his comments because I thought, rightfully so, that they would have some gravitas to him. So I pulled up a chair next to some of my buddies from Missouri, the beat writers, and Sankey said later, he said, "What were you doing among the great unwashed?" He said, "I look out over the podium, and you're sitting there with your laptop and you're typing." I didn't have the heart to tell him that I was fixing my fantasy baseball lineup. With DeGrom going on the IL, I've got real concerns with my rotation right now. But I said, listen, Greg, because that's how I can interact. Greg, I'm a man of the people. All right, I got to be in there with my people. Yeah, by the way, hard-pressed to find somebody who spent years and years riding the buses in the minor leagues say I need a handler.
Correct. That's true.
Yeah.
The Jackson to Jacksonville, Florida, the Jackson, Tennessee to Jacksonville, Florida ride was always one of my favorites. It took like 2.5 days.
right. What a grind. Wouldn't trade it for the world, but what a grind.
Right. We're talking to Tom Hart, SEC primetime. All right, so let's talk about Brian Harsin and Auburn. I'm a big fan of his. I didn't see it coming. I probably should have. Auburn fans were like, who? Alabama fans were laughing. I think it's a right mix. It'll be interesting to see how quickly he can get Bo Nix to take the next step.
That's the most pivotal piece to their puzzle. And as much promise as Nix has shown, his desire to leave the pocket and to rely on his legs when the first inkling of trouble comes his way has retarded his growth as a quarterback. I think it's simple to say. And I think Chad Morris and Gus Malzahn had a hard time fixing that issue. And maybe they didn't recognize it the way that those of us watching from afar and from 30,000 feet saw it every single game. But if he can get things going, I mean, listen, when he showed up, that's the kind of kid with his pedigree you thought, well, by the time he leaves, there could be a statue. And he's got a lot of work to do to get there. And with a new coaching staff, that makes it harder. But the potential that was there from day one is still very much there for Bo Nix.
Is Ole Miss under the radar a little bit? I mean, I've seen a lot of preseason awards going out. Matt Corral is getting quarterback of the year. And it came out on Tuesday from Nick Saban that Bryce Young already has like 7 figures in name, image, and likeness. My goodness.
Wow. He's got 7 figures. All right, so think about it from this perspective. He's got 7 figures in endorsement deals. The leading endorsement earner in Major League Baseball is Shohei Ohtani. According to Forbes, Shohei Ohtani will make a total of $6 million in endorsements this year. That's coming from 2 different continents.
Right.
The Alabama quarterback, without having started, has he started a game? Without having started a game, is already at least a sixth of the way there.
I'm sure that's going to hurt recruiting in the future.
Oh yeah, it's really going to get in the way. It's really going to. I don't mean to be old man yells at cloud, and I want the players to get their share of the pie.
Even if it cuts into your Delta jeans.
I draw the line there. I want them to get their share, but I'm reticent about what this means for the future. We know the SEC is a high-stakes game, and fans react in such a way. But the beauty of college football and collegiate sports as a whole is this identity that fans have with their team, whether they went to that school or not, whether they're from that state or not, right? I mean, there are Duke basketball fans who have never been to Durham, North Carolina, who ride and die with their team. Same with Alabama football fans, right? But what separates college from the professionals is the sense that that's my team, that's my school, that's my state, they represent all of us, and I have great pride in what they do. My concern is that once these deals become more public, there becomes a, I don't know if jealousy is the right word, but the expectations change a little bit. Bryce Young is making $1 million to play college football at the University of Alabama. That changes the fan-player paradigm overnight. Now, maybe it's only for a portion of the fan base. Maybe 99% of the fan base will treat him the same, whether he was earning $1 million or simply on scholarship. Or maybe there's a guy who's got that money coming in under the table that's not public. It has the ability to fundamentally change that player-fan interaction, and in my opinion, not for the good of the game.
All right, let's wrap it up here with Tom Hart, hosts SEC Primetime Play-by-Play, along with Jordan Rogers and Cole Kubelik, a baseball guy. And I know we kid about those two guys, Cole and Jordan, but how much football have you learned from those guys as you came up through all the way to the from the minors all the way to the Braves, and now you're hosting, you know, SEC football?
A ton. I feel like the willingness to learn is, no matter how old you are, is the biggest part of it. We're the only crew that I'm aware of at ESPN, maybe in college football, where all three of us played college football. I played 1 year, small college football, one and done, and got out of there. But I have this curiosity about the game. I have a baseline knowledge that is what it is, but it's curiosity of why. That's my favorite word, why. Hey, look at the pressure on the edge. They were wrong to pick him up. They should have picked him up. Why? And we capitalize on that by watching film together every Friday. Before we sit down with coaches, and this is a tip Sean McDonough gave me. He said, you're going to have a sideline analyst. You need to make sure both analysts are on the same page. We go in and we break down the game before. And Jordan and Cole talk about everything from the quarterback to the line play to how to read coverage. And so that has helped me learn a ton. And I don't need to be an expert, but I need to know enough to be able to ask them the proper questions directly so they can share their expertise. And I think that's what sets our crew apart.
Tom Hart, play-by-play, SEC Primetime, Saturday night. Also on Thursdays, if you want to know about the Atlanta airport, Tom Hart is the Twitter one to follow. He will let you know if it's a 30-minute wait or a 2.5, 3-hour wait. I appreciate your help with that.
It's the least I can do. Now, I just need somebody who shows up earlier than I do, who can send me that notification so I know how soon I need to leave the house.
I appreciate it, my friend. Congrats on all the success. Talk with you soon.
David, anytime. Great to be with you.
Dave Schultz back live at SEC Media Day, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. Root and Wiggins holding down the fort at our Palatial Studios in Mobile. All right, one of the last schools that arrived here on Thursday was Arkansas. Sam Pittman's led Razorbacks were joined by host with 103.7 The Buzz. It is John Neighbors. John, first of all, where did the pipes come from at karaoke night? You have, if the radio sports talk show thing doesn't work out, dude, you can belt it out. You can sing.
Yeah, I think it was some of that mystery juice in those vodkas that I was putting down. I don't know. Maybe it just made me sound like Frank Sinatra out there. No, I honestly, like, I had – it's funny you brought that up because I'm being honest. Like, I don't sing in front of people a lot, and there have been a lot of people, whether it's you or on social media, they're like, hey, man, you're actually really good. I'm like, I have never felt that way before. So I don't know. Maybe it was just the acoustics in the room or something. But, yeah, it was so much fun, though. I enjoyed it, and hopefully that's not the last time we come to Hoover to do it.
All right, let's talk about it. Arkansas, Sam Pittman, I guess he kind of changed the culture last year. What does that mean to you? Because everyone's trying to change the culture. All the new coaches try to change the culture. I thought last year Sam Pittman was just a great fit for Arkansas. That he wanted the gig. It was a tough gig to fill, and he just seems like a good fit, and he appears to have changed that culture. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a cliche to say, you know, when it's talking about culture change and all that. Like you said, every coach says that. But the thing about Sam Pittman coming to Arkansas is it was actually a much-needed culture change, because under Chad Morris, it was just bad. Like, everything was bad. He didn't understand it. He didn't even want to be there. His family didn't even move to Fayetteville. Like, they stayed in Texas. So you could just tell. They didn't buy in. They didn't care. And Sam Pittman was that energy that they needed, of someone that not only wants to be a head coach, wants to be successful, has all the experience, but he truly believes Arkansas is, like, the best place in the country, and he would not be anywhere else. He loves the Razorback mascot. He loves the pigs. He embraces the hog call. Like, there's everything about him embodies what Arkansas is all about. So he's a perfect fit. Now just becomes, can he make that fit into winning football games? Can he make it to where he not only has great recruiting, but great development, great assistant coaching hires, all of that? Can he put it all together, execute game plans, and win games?
Yeah, he doesn't feel like he's using Arkansas as a stepping stone. This is his step.
Yeah, he has said that. In fact, he went on Scott Van Pelt last year after they beat Ole Miss, or Mississippi State, I believe, one of the two. But either way, he went on the show, and Scott Van Pelt asked him about that. He's like, you know, is this a place that you can, you know, retire or whatnot? And he says, this is, and Sam Pittman says, quote, this is probably going to cost me a lot of money one day, but I'm not leaving. This is my last job as a football coach. This is where I want to be. I don't want to be anywhere else. And whenever my time is up here at Arkansas, I'm going to retire from the game of football. So this is it for Sam Pittman. Whether he's successful or not is yet to be determined. But if he is successful, Razorback fans don't have to worry about him leaving anytime soon.
We're talking to John Neighbors, 103.7 The Buzz at SEC Media Days. All right, who's the quarterback?
KJ Jefferson. Sam Pittman even said so much today. He says that KJ does have competition, but KJ Jefferson is the guy. I think everybody is not surprised by that. He was the guy that came in last year against Missouri on the road when Felipe Franks couldn't go, and performed really well. Threw four touchdown passes. Obviously, he had a couple of interceptions there, and there was a couple of times where you could tell he looked like a young, raw quarterback, but there's no doubt athletically he has everything you want. He's got a big cannon of an arm. He's about 6'3", 240 pounds, so he's a big frame. He can run. He can do it all. It's all going to come down to his decision-making. Can he know when to pass, when not to pass, when to throw, when not to throw, when to run, when not to run, when to pitch it, when not to pitch it? It's about decisions. If he is a great decision-maker, he may be one of the top five quarterbacks in the SEC because of all the other things. He's got a great receiver core to throw to as well, but we just kind of have to wait and see. But people are really optimistic about him.
All right, so then what's the goal of the Pittman offense? Is it to slow it down, get in the dirt and in the mud? Because can he keep up with the Ole Misses and the LSUs and the Alabamas? Or is the defense pretty good to maybe, you know, we can slow these teams down? What's the goal of the Pittman offense?
Well, Kendall Briles being the offensive coordinator, it's going to be fast. Yeah, like, I mean, if you've ever watched any of the Briles offenses at Baylor, it's all about fast. It's all about speed. But, you know, at a place like Arkansas, that's what you have to do. And I think that Sam Pittman's really embraced that. And, you know, Barry Odom is a great defensive mind. And I think everyone's on the same page where it's like, Barry, we just need you to be good. You know, you're not going to be a 10 points per game holding these offenses, because our offense is going to move fast. You're going to give up points. But can you just bend and not break? Can you hold the opponents to a reasonable score? Let our offense do the thing, which is kind of the way that college football is nowadays anyway. So it's very offensive driven. It's very speed driven. And Sam Pittman understands that. And that's why he hired these coordinators.
All right, so who can take advantage of that offensively? Give us some names that can take advantage of the speed.
Oh, I mean, you're talking about Treylon Burks, the wide receiver. He's phenomenal. In fact, it was funny because we all knew how great he was, but Sam Pittman said today that he needed to get in better shape. He's like, you can't be out there hunting hogs, which is what Treylon likes to do. He loves to go hunting and fishing. He's like, you can't be hunting hogs and get in great shape. But apparently he's gotten in great shape. So he's already phenomenal as it is, but the fact that he wasn't even in great shape last year shows you that he's still got a lot of elements to his game. So he's going to be great. Look out for Treylon Smith, who's the running back. He was a transfer from Arizona State just last year, and he played at Arkansas. He kind of took over for Rakeem Boyd when Rakeem Boyd opted out, and he was a really good scat back. He was really good at speed, too, so look out for him. Davion Warren's another guy. He's like a sixth-year senior coming back. Lots of speed, but he got injured last year, so there's going to be a few pieces there that are really going to be able to take advantage of it, and some of these guys we've heard about, we just haven't seen yet to get out on the field, so there's plenty of speed on the skill positions for this team.
I certainly don't know this personally, but I'm told a couple of those Hawks can be, they're not fast, but they're sneaky quick.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know what? Sam Pittman's probably going to use that in his next press conference and talking about it, because that's what he wants. He wants that culture of hardworking, determined, you know, blue collar. He mentions that a lot, too. But he understands, as long as he's been around, which he's an offensive line guy, he understands in the SEC, you got to have speed to win. And that's what he's trying to build right now offensively.
Talking to John Neighbors, 103.7 The Buzz in Arkansas. All right, what about the defense? Who can step up? Who's special on the Razorbacks' defense?
Well, we know that Grant Morgan, one of the players that got brought to the SEC media days here, is a phenomenal linebacker, a very strong, fundamentally sound guy that led the SEC in tackles last year. He started as a walk-on, too. Like, a lot of people don't realize that. He was a walk-on, couldn't really find a position. They put him at linebacker, and now he's grown into being one of the better linebackers in the SEC. So it kind of starts with him and his leadership. Jalen Catalon, the safety, hard-hitting, head-hunting type of guy. That's only 5'9", but he can put it to you. One of the best safeties in the league as well. So it's also great with him. Bumper Pool's another linebacker that really did a lot of good things. They just got to stay healthy. That's the thing. Is these players are good, but health came into play last year just like it did with a lot of teams. But those are kind of the three guys it starts with. And Dorian Gerald's another one, defensive lineman. Now, he was out last year and the year before. He's had a lot of injuries, and a lot of them have been out of his control. But when he's healthy, he's as good of a defensive lineman in the SEC. So as long as he can stay on the field, they're going to have really good players, star player, all SEC caliber players at each position group on the defense.
Talking to John Neighbors on Thursday afternoon game plan, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP at SEC Media Days. All right, he's changed the culture. Maybe should have won a game that he didn't last year against Auburn. So what's the expectations? Like you said, he's installed the culture. Can he win? It's the hardest division in college football, the SEC West. What's a good year for Sam Pittman?
If he can go 7-5,
that's a really good year.
That's a really good year. That's a year that'll get Razorback fans behind him saying, okay, this is going in the right direction.
He'll get the money in extension if he goes 7-5.
Oh, yeah. He may even win Coach of the Year with this schedule going 7-5. But, you know, because they got Texas week 2. They have the SEC West schedule. They go to Georgia. And not only that, but they go to LSU, to Bama, and also to Ole Miss, and then A&M and Arlington. So it's their easiest games in the conference are all at home, which is good, I guess. But still, it doesn't get any easier than that, and there's a lot of question marks. But here's the thing: I think best case scenario, they could go 9-3. I know that that's wild, and I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to do it. But if the ball bounced their way perfectly, I think that they could end up winning a lot more SEC games than people have them credit for. But I say 6-6, 7-5 in that range. You do that, that's the expectation. You're good to go, and I think people are buying in even more.
I may have to put you in the 105.5 concussion protocol, but you talked about the magic juice last night. Maybe you were having some of that today. All right, let's wrap it up here with John Neighbors. A very eclectic selection when it comes to your karaoke. I mean, you're doing it all.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I like to do the group karaoke's a lot more than solo. Like, so solo can be fun, and I know some people do it, but I think the groups make it a lot more fun when you do it with your friends and people that really get into it as well. So, I didn't even really select any of the songs we did. I just, it was like Barrett comes up to me. He's like, hey, you want to do Miss New Booty? All right, I'm up there. Chris Gordy's like, hey, you want to do Shaggy? All right, I'm there. You know, it's just kind of like, I'll be here for your hype man and your backup if you need me. I love doing it, man. I love hanging out with those guys. It makes it a lot more fun. And listen, SEC Media Days is fun, but when you can kind of kick back and relax and get a lot of people loosened up a little bit, especially doing something as fun as karaoke, it's always a good night. So it was pretty special last night.
John Neighbors, 103.7 The Buzz, following the Razorbacks. Appreciate your time, my man. Great meeting you as well.
Absolutely, man. Great meeting you, and safe travels.
John Neighbors there joining Dave Schultz. Looking forward to seeing what Sam Pittman can do at Arkansas. Love me some Sam Pittman. We can't be doing any of this without all of our sponsors. We are presented by Allstate agent Ken Morgan, Moe's Original Barbecue. Also brought to you by Southern Cancer Center, Greer's Market and Cash Shaver, Wade Distributors, Crane Works, Green and Phillips. We really appreciate everybody for helping us get there, because if we weren't there, well, we'd probably be at Sunbelt Media Days. But we'll come back after this. We've got so much more for you coming up. Tide and Tiger Report. We've got Jordan D. Hill from the Opelika Auburn News. We'll hear from Chuck Oliver. Also, Drew DeArmond. Maybe have time to squeeze in the few minutes we had with Bo Nix. We might do that in the last hour as well. Stick around. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Today's music on Sports Radio 105.5 is brought to you by 92.5 The Soul, classic rhythm and blues.
This is CJ Mosley, inside linebacker, and you listen to the sports station, WNSP 105.5.
Back on the game plan, Stephen Root here with you, taking you home. I think we've allowed Dave to get out of Hoover. He has been hard at work getting all these interviews for us, and we have a bunch more to come. Really appreciate all the work done by him up there riding solo, trying to get it all done by himself. A lot of great content coming out of Media Days. You know, we go into it probably knowing we're not going to get any massive breaking news, though we did yesterday, that not coming out of Hoover in SEC Media Days, but in relation to the SEC, big news yesterday with potential conference realignment down the road here with Texas and Oklahoma. We'll see how that proceeds. But yeah, all the content we've gathered while in Hoover, Dave gathering while in Hoover, you can find it all at WNSP.com. There is a page there. You cannot miss it. It's got every single interview that we have done so far. And I think we're at 30 or so. And they're all there in one spot. You can go listen to the ones you want to hear, including Fedarian Mathis from Alabama, lucky enough today to get Brian Harrison and Bo Nix, and among a ton of other media members, many of whom you know.
We have Auburn beat writer Jordan Hill from the Opelika Auburn News. Nothing went on yesterday, just some cliche stuff, right?
Yeah, nothing out of the ordinary.
So about a quarter to three, the news dropped. One source, this was all based on one source, said Oklahoma and Texas were talking to the SEC. And I was wondering why they just didn't come out and say, yeah, they did. They called. But apparently it's gone much further than that, than anybody knew about.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of talk. It was really interesting to be in the ballroom when that happened, but especially because Jimbo Fisher was getting ready to go up on the stage, and all of a sudden you could just tell there was a buzz in the
room. Little murmur.
And Jimbo was asked about it, and the best response I've seen yet, he was asked, you know, what he thought, and he's like, I'm sure they would like to get in the SEC. But, you know, you understand that there's so many different aspects of why they could be interested in the SEC. I mean, it could even be, you know, still a power play within the Big 12 to say, look, we are considering other options and maybe trying to get more power as far as the conference they're currently in. But you look at the SEC, I mean, look at the deal that they just signed with ESPN. I mean, I think it's like $3 billion with a B.
Right.
We were talking about that yesterday. I mean, you can understand the power that that would give a team, you know, teams like Oklahoma and Texas, who already, you know, have such a storied history in the sport, college football specifically. So, you know, we'll see if what comes out of this. You know, nobody came out and denied it. There's a lot of non-answers.
Right. That's right.
You know, Greg Sankey and some of the other people that were asked about it. So that kind of tells you that there's at least a little smoke to it. If something happens, I think it's way too early to say, but it's interesting. And just as a pure college football fan, I'm excited if it were to happen, just because, you know, it would be really interesting to see the SEC grow this way and get two really big power players into the conference.
Maybe a little bit more travel in your future. Everyone's suggesting Auburn, Alabama ends up in the East.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, I grew up in North Georgia, so I mean, that would be more trips to South Carolina and probably Tennessee, some of those teams. So I wouldn't be opposed to that, and that'd be really interesting if that moved Alabama to the East Division. I mean, you know, they've dominated the West, I mean, for the last 15, 20 years, to see that kind of shift. And, hey, maybe they got interested and did like a North-South. I mean, like, they could, really interesting and really kind of mix things up in the conference. I'm always for something new looks and seeing maybe new rivalries come out of something like this. And I mean, I'm always down for Texas A&M. That would be huge for me.
You can already hear the little murmur, as you said, in the room yesterday, but from Baton Rouge, expansion, right? You can hear LSU wanting to move Alabama out. Yeah. I think it's a big win for A&M as well. They're ahead of Texas. Maybe people think Texas would catch up. I'm not so sure. They've had a long time to do it. SEC Network was one of the great rollouts. The Longhorn Network was one of the worst. I mean, yeah. It is night and day, but what's happened here over the last decade.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see as this goes and if we kind of see the power players, what the people involved at Texas A&M, what that looks like. Because, I mean, I can understand if there is hesitation on their side because, I mean, they are clearly superior right now to Texas football. Now, we'll see what Steve Sarkisian's able to do at Texas, and maybe he's able to bring Texas back to sort of those Mac Brown glory days. But that's several years removed now, and I can understand why Texas A&M would want to say, look, we don't want Texas to come into the SEC. I mean, we clearly have an advantage being here. We can go into our own state and say, look, if you want to go play SEC football, you can do that in the Lone Star State. So if we get closer to saying that there's actually going to be a vote, I could see hesitation on the Texas A&M side to say, we're going to leave what they consider, you know, their brother, their big rival. We're going to try to leave them out. And what maybe sides we see, maybe we see Missouri as well saying that, you know, well, we want to kind of keep the Big 12 at bay. And obviously we can do that and keep Oklahoma and Texas over there. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any movement in that direction and what that winds up looking like.
Jordan Hill joining me on an opening kickoff plus a Tide and Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan from the Opelika Auburn News. All right, some would say saving best for last. Auburn is going to wrap this SEC Media Days up, one of only three quarterbacks attending SEC Media Days. How do you think Bo Nix and Auburn is going to handle this? A lot of Radio Row is gone, as it turns out. How do you think they're going to handle the media? Because, you know, Matt Corral, all preseason, you know, all SEC. All right, JT Daniels, Georgia, highly favored. The big question that everyone has at quarterback in the SEC this year is Bo Nix.
I don't mean this as a bad thing, but I think you and I and the other media personalities are probably going to be disappointed in what we hear because I don't think we're going to get headlines out of what we hear from Bo Nix and Brian Harsin. I think they're going to really stick to their talking points. I mean, what I'm interested to see from Bo, I think he's going to talk about how much more comfortable he is feeling now in this new offense compared to, say, in the spring when we got to talk to him, you know, talking about his mechanics, talking about what he can do to be a better quarterback, because we've seen flashes. I don't think anyone would look at Bo Nix and say he has no talent. I think that's clearly not the case, and obviously he's made plays in the past, but it's consistency. That has been the knock on him, and rightfully so. So you get a guy like Mike Bobo and obviously Brian Harsin as well in and working with him, working on the mechanics, working on the fundamentals, I think this is his best chance to try to take that next step that a lot of people wanted to see last year, and Bo never took it. So I'll be interested to see how he handles that. And as far as Brian Harsin, I kind of expect the same thing. I think it's really going to kind of mirror what we saw way back in December when he was hired. I think that it's just going to be really talking about his vision for the program, probably a little more steps along now compared to them because he's obviously been on the ground and recruiting and adding players. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of things that make us go, oh, wow, man, he really said that? I'm sure there'll be nuggets, and I'm sure he'll give us some updates on how things are looking as we get closer and closer to the start of the season.
You don't think Harsin's going to talk up there for 40 minutes before you guys get to ask a question like that opening press conference?
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath. We've been talking among the other people on the beat. I'm saying there may be three or four questions because he'll probably get up there and give a grand speech and, you know, and in conclusion, you know what I mean, kind of ride it. But we'll see, and I'm sure he'll have plenty to say and try to build up some interest. Again, he's going to be closing things out, so I'm also interested to just see what the room is kind of like because he'll be it, and there's obviously interest because it's a new era at Auburn.
Sure.
But we'll get to see sort of what that looks like, and I'm interested to kind of hear from the other reporters sort of the things that they want to kind of pick Brian's brain about.
Do we know who's calling the plays? Is it Mike Bobo who's going to call the plays, or is Harsin calling the plays?
When he talked about it when Bobo first came on board, it really sounds like Bobo will be the one calling the plays.
Okay.
Now, as far as the offense, it sounds like it's going to be kind of a blend between both of them, and they know each other. They go way back. They knew each other when Harsin was an offensive coordinator at Texas, and that's like 2009, 2010, and Bobo was still at Georgia. But they knew each other then. Then they coached against each other in the Mountain West.
Right.
So I think they're comfortable and kind of have an understanding coming in what the offense might look like. So I think it's going to be a coordinated effort between the two, but I think ultimately Bobo's going to be the one calling the plays.
All right, on the other side of the ball, and we're talking with Jordan Hill from the Opelika Auburn News on a Tide and Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan, plus a morning opening kickoff with Mark and Lee, Dave Schultz live at SEC Media Days 2021. The other side of the ball is where Auburn is supposed to dominate. They get Owen Papo is here. They got Smoke Monday in the backfield. They got mobiles, Roger McCreary in the back defensive backfield. This is who's going to have to carry Auburn early, although three of the four ball games are not necessarily should be that tough for Auburn. But what are we expecting from Owen Papo and the defense this year?
I think that the defense has a chance to really shine, and I think they started out. You knew that there was talent coming back. As soon as Roger McCreary said he was coming back, that was a step in the right direction. Then you bring in Derek Mason. I think that was probably Brian Harsin's best hire across the board. I mean, everybody, you know, I know there was rumors about South Carolina. Other schools were really interested in maybe bringing him on as defensive coordinator. I think this defense has a chance to be really special. They're loaded in the secondary. I think the biggest thing is if they can kind of figure out this defensive front. It's going to be a different look with Derek Mason. They got guys, but I think none of them are really proven. And then they had some injuries. Jeremiah Wright, who was really coming on strong, he had a chance. He's from Selma, and he's a rising sophomore, and everybody was really hyping him up, and he got hurt towards ACL. So they're trying to figure out that defensive front, but I think they're going to be in great shape in the second level and then the secondary. I mean, when you got Zakobi McClain and Owen Papo coming back, and they both had triple-digit tackles last year, I mean, that's a great sign, and they've got some good young guys behind them, Wesley Steiner, Cam Riley, they've been promising. I think the defense has a chance to be really special. I'm interested to see what Owen has seen, especially with some new pieces, some transfers coming in, what that's looked like, and also hearing from him about sort of the strength and conditioning, because I mean, he was almost bouncing off the walls when we talked to him in the spring. You know, he said we're gonna look like Marines in the fall. I kind of want to, you know, follow up on that. How's that going, and what does he think this team's going to be capable of doing, and can they last those four quarters and beat some of the best teams we're gonna be playing this year?
Well, looking for the front guys, I've been reading your stuff. It could be multiple fronts. They don't know what they're running.
Absolutely. It'll kind of go between a three-man front and a four-man front. And they've got pieces. They've got guys like Colby Wooden, who's probably going to be playing that defensive end position. I think he has a chance to really be special. Got some edge guys that kind of, you know, changed sort of the vernacular with some of, you know, was really buck linebacker was what they called it with Kevin Steele. Now Derek Mason's kind of calling it the edge position. You got guys like T.D. Moultrie and some of the other guys. Derek Hall is another guy that I think could really break out. They've got the pieces, but I don't know exactly. I almost kind of compare it to the men's basketball team after they've reloaded. I think they have talent. I don't know how they're going to align it and sort of the best way they're going to attack with it. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of the top three defenses in the SEC. I think they got a chance to be special. Offense is sort of where I'm more interested in how that looks and if they can kind of keep up. And, you know, I think the defense has the talent to really hold teams back, but can the offense take advantage?
All right, let's wrap it up here with Jordan Hill from the Opelika Auburn News. All right, what's a good year for Auburn wins-wise? What would be disappointing? What are you expecting?
My sort of barometer is 8 wins. 8 to 9 wins, I think, is realistic.
9 wins is realistic?
I think it's realistic.
Wow.
I'm not saying that. But I think they've got a great defense. I think if they can maximize Mike Bobo calling the offense, and if he can really kind of focus on Bo's strengths and really play into them, I think the biggest thing is really going to be the offensive line and the receiving core. I mean, it's just really unproven in both areas, and the offensive line struggled so much. But the key games, I think, are going to be that. I really think the game that will tell us how the season goes is that at Penn State game, week 3. If they're able to go win that, I think that would be huge and be a big boost. And I think that would be a big boost for what Brian Harsin's wanting to build to the future. If you can start the season 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, and you can turn to some of these recruits that they're going after and say, what we're building, you know, this is just the first step. So I think that would be huge. I'm saying, yeah, like eight or nine wins I think is realistic. I think anything past that would be, you know, a very pleasant surprise. But I think this team, you know, this team is not devoid of talent. It's just a matter of figuring out the best position to put several of these guys in and let them make plays and get after some of these other teams.
Live at SEC Media Days on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. Root and Wiggins back at our palatial studios in Mobile. So thrilled to have our next guest on. He is the king of college football. I don't know how you get that title, although if I had the confidence that Chuck Oliver had, who walks into karaoke night with a T-shirt that just says Chuck, my life would be much easier. He's on 105.5 WNSP, 1 to 3 p.m. every day. Weekdays. Chuck, thanks so much for hopping on. How has SEC Media Days been? It was a little slow yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it picked up when Saban walked in. Man, he is always the circus, and it was actually a lot more organized this year. And, you know, we talked a little earlier this week. I normally have a really good media days, you know, because it's just through repetition. I'm a slow learn, but after coming to like 22 of these, I'm like, okay, this is how you get in with the SIDs, et cetera. And so I was anticipating, you know, every year, you know, anticipating a pretty good media days. This year, I actually went the other way. I thought that because of the pandemic lingering and, you know, COVID protocol, that a lot of programs would use it as the backdrop to say, hey, we're not going to Radio Row. Exact opposite. It has been the most productive. It's been as good a media days as I have. We had Saban yesterday. We already had Eli Drinkwitz this morning. We're having, obviously, you know, all throughout the week, Dan Mullen and Kirby Smart and Shane Beamer. I mean, we just got just about everybody. It's just been a tremendous job, and I appreciate everybody in Birmingham, man.
Well, that's how you become the king of college football. All right, the big news yesterday, Texas and Oklahoma showing interest in joining the SEC. It sounded like it was a one-person story, and then other people dove into it, and obviously people are talking about this maybe announced in a couple of weeks, so that thing got ramped up fast yesterday. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Dave, this is funny, and I mentioned this a little earlier that on my show that there is only one way that Texas OU to the SEC thing is accurate. And it would be the most sinister story in college football history if the SEC has put together like a secret 10 to 15 year plan, like to be a 40 team, four division super conference where, all right, the 40 of us, we're going to play our own game. That literally is the only way that Texas and OU would come in, because you have to balance. You can't just bring in a bunch of rolling balls of butcher knives. I mean, you can't just bring in the best programs ever. That's why it was Texas A&M and Missouri. You have to balance that out. So the only way that OU-Texas thing is real is if somehow there's an Oklahoma State-NC State element to it. You have to balance that out on your way to whatever your super conference is going to be. Now, again, I'm sure there's a file on every scenario in downtown Birmingham in Greg Sankey's office. How many? What would it take? What's the possibilities? If they have a grand plan for like a 40 or 50-team super conference in a decade, that's the only way that's the first step.
So you think there's some grand plan and we're just at the tip of the iceberg?
Well, I think that's the only way that OU Texas story is accurate. I agree with Jimbo Fisher. He's like, I'm sure they would like to come into the conference. I don't think it's realistic. I don't know. You know, again, in current, you already have all the money if you're the SEC, and you're going to bring in two programs who you're going to have to divide that thing an equal slice from the start, whereas in the Big 12, both OU and Texas, they've already got the money thing gamed. So I'm not exactly sure where this, you know, mustard seed kind of sprouted, but you're right. It took about an hour and a half, and it went from a maybe to, oh, hell, it's going to happen in 2 weeks.
Talking to the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, heard weekdays 1 to 3 on WNSP. All right, what coaches impressed you that you spoke with this week?
Really, Dan Mullen, and it was clear to me that he was trying to have a bounce back after not just on field, because on field I think they did about as well as they could. They didn't play good defense last year, and Kyle Trask, I'll give that guy credit. He threw them into a real game in the fourth quarter against Bama. All right, so that was it.
Do you have the Disney rights on Kyle Trask? Because that's a movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100% true. And so with him moving on now, you know, I was looking forward to talking to Dan Mullen about some of the off-field stuff, though. Because on-field, I think they kind of, you know, did what they could have last year. He had bad moments at Texas A&M. He had bad moments against Missouri. He had bad moments all throughout the season, and that's just not who he is. So I like talking to Dan Mullen earlier this week. Shane Beamer, he was very – and I was candid with him. I was like, I think you're staring at Mount Everest. There ain't no players in South Carolina, and you got Godzilla across state. And he was like, it's going to be tough. And so he starts into that, you know, it's going to be brisk, but let's go for a swim, you know, when the Titanic's sinking. And so that was Shane Beamer, and I really enjoyed that. You know, and you got to have that attitude up front, man.
Talking to Chuck Oliver, weekdays 1 to 3 p.m. WNSP as we're live from SEC Media Days on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. All right, wrapping things up, it's going to be Brian Harsin and the Auburn Tigers. And earlier this week, we had Matt Corral from Ole Miss and JT Daniels from Georgia. And those guys are very highly thought of. JT Daniels in Georgia in the Heisman conversation and, you know, going to challenge for the national championship. Matt Corral getting preseason All-SEC quarterback talk, and then you have Bo Nix, and it's kind of like heads or tails. Which way are we going to go? Can Bo Nix get to that point? As I mentioned, it's kind of like we had him against Oregon, and we saw him in the spring game this past spring, and it kind of looked the same. And so how does Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo get the most out of that talent that is obviously there with Bo Nix?
You know, it's so funny the way you phrase that if you go back to, you know, the Oregon game, his first collegiate snap, or like the last play of the Iron Bowl, you know, it is the absolute best and worst of Bo Nix, and you just covered his whole career. Dave, I'll tell you, pick a game. Pick a Saturday. Arkansas, Kentucky, Georgia, LSU. You'll see the best of Bo and the worst of Bo in the same game, and I mean in piles. What I wish for Bo, and there's no DeLorean, we can't go back in time, but I wished for Bo that his first 2 years on a college campus playing for whoever he was playing for, it would have been a little bit more preparation for his junior and senior years, because he's played a lot of ball, and you get better with reps. I mean, obviously, the more you play, you better get. He ain't maximized his 2 years of college football so far. And I feel bad for Bo. I think Bo has done everything that he was asked to do. I think that Bo has had the right attitude. I know he's talented. I got literally not one issue at all with Bo. I just think it was a tough situation. Square peg, round hole. And I've said this before. It would have been better for both Gus and Bo if he might have just wound up somewhere else. I mean, it was just not a good fit for his skill set in that offense and whatever. Two really good people, tough combination.
Do you think it would have been better off if he sat for a year?
Oh, that would have helped. But, you know, a five-star quarterback in today's, you know, I'm going to sit for a year. No, after 3 weeks, I'm going to transfer to Arkansas State because I want to play, brother. And so, I mean, was it Blake Barnett did it a couple years ago after the opener and found the loophole, boom, off to Arizona State. So, it's a tough scenario for any head coach like that. And, you know, Gus tied his wagon to Bo, and then that's what Joey Gatewood did. So it's not a unique situation, and it's tough on everybody involved.
All right, a couple more questions for Chuck Oliver, the King of College Football, weekdays, 1 to 3 p.m., Sports Radio 105.5, WNSP on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. All right, can anybody stop the steamroller that is Alabama?
I got terrified yesterday sitting down talking to Nick Saban. And one of my questions was, you know, you start.
And you don't scare easily.
No. But I was, because I'm an Auburn grad. And I'm going to say, anybody listening right now who's not an Alabama fan, you should be scared. And I mean, like, hide under this table sort of scared. Because I had a question about 3 weeks ago. Because, you know, I'm just getting ready for media days, and I'm sketching out what I may ask the coach if we speak. And one of them was, who's going to pretend to be Derek King? When you get to opponent-specific prep, who's going to be Derek King? And so I kind of put that with my questions for Saban. Totally unrelated, about a week later, I'm watching video of this kid named Jalen Milroe. Wow, he is a freshman quarterback from Katy, Texas, who is in Tuscaloosa now. And I told him yesterday, I was like, I don't think I need to ask you. It's going to be Jalen Milroe, and he ain't just going to be playing Derek King in practice. He's going to be on the field against Miami. And Saban kind of sat back and got this look on his face and is almost like, who told you about Jalen Milroe? Because, you know, freshman quarterbacks, true freshmen, especially with Bryce Young just now getting the job, that was one of the big moments yesterday for me, because Saban's like, okay, well, I guess word's out. I mean, you got Huddle and YouTube and all kinds of videos. This Jalen Milroe kid, I'm so intrigued. And the word I got from somebody in Tuscaloosa, because I turned around and immediately asked, you know, folks on campus, they're using the name Lamar Jackson for this kid. And, like, Bryce Young is the one who's just about – like, when the media vote is released tomorrow, it wouldn't surprise me if Bryce Young is second team or maybe third team behind Daniels and Corral, but that's your first three. And there's a quarterback who's now just on campus out of Texas. He may be better.
So you think he's actually going to play in the opener against Miami?
My belief is that against Miami in week one, you will see Jalen Milroe on the field doing something, and not when it's 41-10, when the game's still being decided.
All right, let's talk about Georgia. Everyone seems to think there's an incredible amount of pressure on Georgia, partly because Georgia's got the talent and the experience, whereas Alabama's got the talent but not the experience. Florida's got the talent but not the experience. A bunch of turnover at both those schools. Can Kirby Smart and Georgia pull it off this year?
Sure they can, because they'll get that one-game scenario. See, that, you know, I'm always worried about, like, the 12-game scenario. You know, Florida could win in Jacksonville again this year. They can't beat Georgia over 12 weeks. You know, Georgia could show up in Jacksonville, kid loses his mind, has four turnovers, and suddenly you're down by three and the game's over. 12 weeks, Florida can't pull it out this year. So that means, in my estimation, Georgia is getting their 60-minute shot. And so then I'll say, for Georgia versus Bama or LSU or A&M, whoever, well, they've got the same chance Florida has against Georgia. In a one-game scenario, when you have talent and good coaching, even if you're staring at Godzilla or Rodan, you can still overcome in that one setting. And so, absolutely, Georgia will be national champions this year and next year and could have been last year. That's where Kirby has the program, and it's so impressive to me how he did it in a blink of an eye.
So we got Godzilla references. We got Titanic references. We got Back to the Future references.
And I gave you a Rodan, too, maybe a Mothra. I'll go wherever, man. You just got to make the points. And you know, I wouldn't use those references if we were talking Conference USA, would I? I really wouldn't. And maybe it would have been like Freddie or Jason, but now you got to go bigger for the SEC, right?
We're talking to Chuck Oliver, weekdays 1 to 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. Come visit us in Mobile anytime.
Honestly, and I say this, it's my second home, man. My dad's still down there, and along the Gulf Coast, it's just my favorite place to visit. Love everybody in Mobile. And love when I'm down there. Tell Lee I said hey too, man.
We'll do so. All right, he left Heim out. He left Mark Heim out, probably intentionally. We'll be back with more on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. Dave Schultz back live at SEC Media Day, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP on a Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. Stephen Root, Nick Wiggins back at our Palatial Studios in Mobile. Really a pleasure to have our next guest on. He comes on all the time from ESPN Huntsville. He is Drew DeArmond. Drew, how have you enjoyed Media Days?
I've enjoyed it, Dave. I mean, it's been good to be back to normal. Seeing everybody, hearing from the coaches. We didn't hear from these eight of these guys for the first time because of no SEC Media Days for some first-year guys last year, and then the guys that have joined the league. We're going to hear from Brian Harsin, as well, and can't wait to hear that. And to kind of get a feel for Auburn. The two coaches that have really impressed me this week that I hadn't had a chance to, you know, be around, I was really impressed with Shane Beamer. I thought he really came across well. And then I was really impressed, and I know it's going to be taking a knife to a gunfight, but Clark Lee and kind of his vision for Vanderbilt and understanding that university, really was impressed with him yesterday. And Davian Davis, who, of course, you guys are Mobile, Alabama, we're Huntsville. He's from my area. He's from my backyard. And he Clark Lee had some really strong praise for him, said he's the heartbeat of their football team. So it was good to catch up with Davian and see how he's grown. But it's been good so far. But it's crazy that Nick Saban got – basically overshadowed yesterday.
Well, he did. We'll get to the overshadowing part here in a minute, but let's talk about Nick Saban. What was the thing that, I don't say impressed you, but what stood out with what Nick Saban said yesterday?
Well, I think one thing, and it's a minor thing, it's a personnel thing, but it's basically he let the cat out of the bag on the O-line a little bit, which we all kind of looked at each other, everybody that covers Alabama every day. Javian Cohen, who's a sophomore from Phenix City near the Auburn area, He signed with Alabama and was getting a lot of run with the ones early in spring, but then got injured, had a bone spur situation, missed the last two scrimmages, including A-Day. And so you wondered kind of where he fit in. Someone asked about the O-line, asked about Javian, and he basically said going into fall camp, he's the first team left guard. And then when you start thinking about that, Emil Ekiyor had missed spring, so he's probably going to be back on the right side. Then you got Chris Owens, who came back for his extra year center and who finished the season when Landon Dickerson was hurt. And then Evan Neal, you know, he's going to flip to the left side. So that opens up – it's right tackle. So right tackle's the one that's open right now. Damian George got a long look in the spring, but don't discount J.C. Latham, you know, the freak IMG Academy five-star. He was good in the spring, but a lot of times, Dave, I've been around this, when we've seen, Cam Robinson, when we've seen Jonah Williams, they take a huge jump from the spring to the fall. I still think Latham has a good shot to win that job, but it's too close to call. But I just thought it was interesting that Javian Cohen, because there's been some Tommy Brown speculation. There's even been speculation about Tommy Brockermeyer moving inside. Interesting that Javian Cohen's positioned himself like that.
So maybe one freshman instead of two freshmen, and maybe not even a freshman.
Right. I mean, if Damian George, I will say this, they like George a lot. When he got to Alabama a year ago, you know, in the summer, he was probably 400 pounds. He's lost 50 pounds. He's one of the first guys off the bench if you want to see a guy that's massive. You know, he got a long look at right tackle and right guard with Ekiyor being out. So I think they really like his potential, especially Nick Saban likes power guys on the right side to get a lot of movement in the running game. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can hold off a guy like Latham. But I do think Latham has a lot of talent. It could be that eventually Damian is a guard, but he may get a look at right tackle this year. But I think right now when you look at it, Alabama, that offensive line, I've said this, they have the talent. They just got to find the pieces and get the five guys put together and get that chemistry going. And it's very important because I think I've told you on your show, look, Bryce Young, that was a huge story too, the NIL, near $1 million. You know, I've heard some stories from people that have spoken to his father that may not be completely accurate, but what is accurate is they have to have Bryce healthy. And if they can't protect him, they don't have the experience. They don't have a Mac Jones waiting in the wings. I don't think that's what Paul Tyson is. And then I love Jalen Milroe and his potential. And Nick Saban, from someone I've spoken with, thinks the kid has Lamar Jackson type talent, but he's not ready to play yet. I think they're going to design some things in the offense maybe to get him involved, but taking every snap at quarterback, no, they've got to have Bryce Young.
Judy Armin from 97.7 ESPN Huntsville joining us out in Tide and Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan live from SEC Media Day, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP. One more Nick Saban Alabama question. What about the shift from power to flexibility, almost a little TB12 going on there in Tuscaloosa where they had 50% less soft tissue injuries and a 5% increase in explosiveness? What have you heard about what they are doing for the players to stay healthy and to improve throughout the season?
Well, that was the question I had for Coach Saban, because they're a year in now, and I just think that it's totally changed everything. Of course, they had the Waddle injury and then Landon Dickerson late in the year, and even the freak broken finger for Devontae Smith. But if you watched it, Dave, watching Alabama through Nick Saban's tenure, there were times I thought near the end of seasons they looked tired, that they were kind of worn down. I didn't think that last year. I thought they kept getting better. Fedarian Mathis kind of said that yesterday. And so I think these guys, Dr. Matt Ray and David Ballou, they've been able to kind of solve the riddle for Nick Saban. Nick Saban's a visionary. He'd seen this coming. But I think what he's done, like he said, the soft tissue injuries are way down, the pulled muscles, the hamstrings, the things that can slow you down. And I just think overall this Alabama team got stronger last year. And what we're hearing in the offseason is these guys are really buying into having individual workouts where they are gaining explosiveness, individual plans for each player where they're not all doing the same thing, and where they trust those two guys, David Ballou and Dr. Matt Ray, to have their best interest at heart and be able to develop them and maximize their athletic potential.
Talking to Judy Armin on Titan Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP, live at SEC Media Days. All right, let's talk about the overshadowing part. Like you said, Nick Saban came and went, and all of a sudden, you know, right before we came on the air, about a quarter to three, all of a sudden, boom, Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. They inquire about that. It was one source, and that was it. And all of a sudden, it was like, well, this is going to be way down in the future. And then by the time my show is over, it's like, well, this is going to be announced in 2 weeks. Where do we stand today, and what do you think about Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC?
It's so interesting, because we talked to Brent Zwerneman this morning on the show, and I felt very fortunate that he took some time for us, because he's been busy. I mean, as he said, no karaoke for me last night. He was up late, and he told us, reiterated twice, he thinks within 2 to 3 weeks. He said it reminded him of 10 years ago when A&M made the jump, and when the Big 12 realized they're not coming back. So instead of 2 or 3 years, it was accelerated and they were gone. Same deal with this. He thinks it's going to happen with Texas and Oklahoma. It would make the SEC the superpower in college athletics, and especially in football. And it would set off some interesting dominoes for the rest of the Big 12, where they're going to end up. Are they going to end up in a Pac-12 with a super conference? And in the SEC, shifting divisions. Like, what can you imagine, Dave? I mean, Alabama and Auburn in the East. I mean, Missouri in the West, where they'd belong. LSU, talk to Matt Moscona today. Nobody knows LSU better than him. He doesn't think LSU would have a problem with staying in the West.
Oh, no, I think Matt Moscona, I think LSU is what, please come on in and see Alabama over there. We'll play you once every so often. But, yes, the people leading the charge is going to be LSU.
The interesting part, too, that Matt told us, the insight, is the pod plan, which would be the 14 pods, where you would play everyone every 4 years. There would not be a deal where you play somebody every 10 years, every 14 years. And I think that's what everybody would want to see. And we'd be going to what Nick Saban, what has he been preaching about? 9-game SEC schedule, which I think would be better for the league.
I mean, do you think if this all comes to fruition, I feel like the Big 12 would cease to exist?
No, they'd be gone. I think where it would be, I'm the most interested, because of their basketball lineage, is Kansas. Where does Kansas end up? If I'm the Pac-12, I'm all over that, though. I want them in my basketball league, because right now they're irrelevant. And so I would want to absorb those teams and almost set up two divisions, and it would almost be like having a three-quarters of the old Big 8 and then pair it with the Pac-12 and have a 16-team Super League. That's what I would do if I were the Pac-12, and try to make myself relevant again, because, Dave, right now they're not.
Well, I feel very fortunate that a Vanderbilt exists, and that's a whole different thing because it's an incredible institution of higher learning, and Kansas. So Syracuse will never be the worst Power 5 program in America. You know, they're awfully close. I mean, is there a chance that somewhere down the line that someone says Kansas football is not worth it, and maybe they drop down to a group of five just for football? Can you do that?
Well, I don't think so because their brand in basketball is too good. And I will say this. I think Kansas could compete in the Pac-12 in football. It's soft league, Dave. I you throw the ball around. You find the right coach.
Have you seen Kansas football?
Yeah, I've seen it. But I also remember what Glenn Mason did and Mark Mangino for a short time.
Well, that's true.
I mean, Glenn Mason doesn't get enough credit for what he did. I'm just talking about going 7-5. And then trying to go to the Final Four and win a national championship in basketball. So I think it would actually enhance the Pac-12 immensely if they could get Kansas. Because I had people telling me, what if Kansas ends up in somewhere like the Missouri Valley? I'm like, no freaking way. Not with that basketball. There's no way that happens. And so it's too important. So if I'm the Pac-12, I am all over that. And the guy that probably didn't get any sleep last night was Bob Bowlesby. I mean, I can't imagine.
All right, let's wrap it up here with Drew DeArmond on a Time Tiger Thursday afternoon game plan. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP SEC Media Days. To wrap up SEC Media Days, Brian Harsin and Auburn, what do you think is the legitimate expectation for Auburn this year, and what would be a high end and what would be low end?
I think high end would be 8-4. Tank Bigsby stays healthy, goes for 1,400 yards. Bo Nix shows improvement in a system that Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo have designed to enhance his pocket presence, going under center, making him a better, more well-rounded quarterback, trusting his protection. They're going to have to develop some receivers, though, but, of course, there's talent there. It's just unknown. I'm going to vote for Tank, first-team All-SEC. I think he's a tremendous talent at running back. Now, defensively, I love the Derek Mason hire. He knows the league. He was a great DC at Stanford. He did a lot with him, hand tied behind his back at Vandy, developing some pros and moving guys around. He'll have more tools at Auburn. But, you know, ceiling 8-4, because I think their schedule's pretty daunting. If Tank got hurt, or if even Bo Nix, I know they got Finley now, but if you lose Bigsby for a time being, or if the O-line struggles, I could see potentially 5-7 or 6-6. But I do think it's polarizing. I think I'm going to still vote them fourth, but Ole Miss is lurking there with Lane Kiffin. If they can tackle somebody, I mean, you know they're going to be good offensively. But and then with Mike Leach, they're going to be a pain in the ass. I mean, but I'm still going to go with Auburn because a lot of times when Auburn's not expected to do much, they kind of surprise you. But I do think a big swing game for them is going to Penn State in Week 3 to try to get to 3-0.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They could start the season 3-1, and then here comes LSU Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. And they've struggled at times, even though they did take LSU apart last year. It was probably their brightest moment of the year. So we'll see that. But Georgia's not a good matchup for them. Georgia's much more talented. And I think right now the biggest deficiency at Auburn, defensively, I think they have enough personnel. But offensively, those receivers, Demetrius Robertson hasn't made a play since he was at Cal Berkeley. So can he come in? Can he have an impact? I don't know. I think Auburn offensively is lacking a little explosiveness, but they've got to have Tank Bigsby go for about 1,400 yards. And then Bo Nix, just not to turn the ball over, be efficient, and I think Auburn can win 8 games. But it's going to be difficult. But I do think I'm interested to see the brand of football Brian Harsin brings.
Drew DeArmond, ESPN in Huntsville, 97.7. A real pleasure to meet you in person. Thanks for coming on the show all the time, and we will talk with you again soon.
Yeah, Dave, thanks. It's always great to see you, and great to be on with you guys.